everyone. I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Lara. We are the host of Once Upon a Niger podcast, where we take you down history lane as we break down stories about people, places, and events in Nigeria's past and present.
That's right. In every episode, we will take you on a journey of our own discoveries as we feed our curiosity and connect with our heritage. Join us to figure out how the chronicles of the past can help write tomorrow's tale.
Hello, hello, Lara.
Hello, Evelyn. How are you?
I'm good. That was like some Cockney.
Some Cockney accent right there. Oh, yeah. All right, love. All right.
I find myself mimicking. Do you sometimes mirror people, like when you're speaking to someone who just has like a different way of speaking from you, and then for like a short period of time after you've spoken to them or you've been in their presence, you just find yourself for a short period of time either mimicking them or mirroring them?
Yeah. I think I do mirror people a lot. Or mimic. Yeah, their accent, yeah. Actually. Yeah, I think that does naturally happen.
It happens.
I think I'm somebody who will... And I think it's as a way of, like, making people more comfortable. Try and... Like, unconsciously, I'll just be talking. I'll talk. Yeah. So I don't know what's inspired the Cockney.
No, nothing's inspired. Because I was thinking of, I've been watching something related, you know, where they were speaking like that, but I don't really think so. Yeah, how's your week been?
My week has been okay. Like, work has been good. I've been feeling productive. Yeah. I feel accomplished.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah. Like, you know, how often do you hear that people are feeling refreshed and energized by their work? Yeah.
Listen, long may that continue.
Amen. Amen.
At the moment, I'm feeling energized by my plants.
You've become a plant mom.
A plant mom, but also I'm actually like growing fruits and veg. Okay. So the other day, well, my mom's a bit of a fruit and veg mom, if you want to call it that. So she's kind of like started experimenting and just growing like spinach, tomatoes, mint. But the problem with her is she doesn't harvest them. So I go to her house and there's like a bed full of like mint growing wild and like spinach. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you know, I come this week. They're like, you know, flourishing. Then I come 2 weeks later. I'm like, what happened to your spinach? And they're like dying off because obviously you need to harvest them for whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I kind of got into that and I started. So she taught me how to plant stuff and I scraped out the seed from like the bell pepper that I bought from Lidl and I dried it on the window. It dried and I've got those pots on my windowsill and I just like, you know, you just try something. I don't know if it's gonna work. And my husband is always just like, oh, okay, let's see. I'm always really enthusiastic and he's just like, okay, yeah.
It's not matching your energy.
It's not matching my energy. I've even got carrots, you know.
When cost of living crisis, you're bringing your own food.
Exactly, we're growing our own food.
You need to match the energy.
And then the other day, he was the one who spotted that my pepper started growing.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, look. Oh, I was like, oh,
That's what happens when you plant seeds.
But I've actually found that really encouraging because I felt like I got some life lessons from that, knowing that when I started, because you kind of watch YouTube videos and people have like different ways of planting stuff. Like some people are like, oh, you know, firstly, you have to like put it in this like cup and cover it for like 1 week. And then when the roots starts to grow, then that's when I was just like, I don't have time for this. I just want to put the seed right into the soil and then just let it grow. So I just did that and I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. So for me, I felt like that kind of taught me that seeing the peppers growing, it was just like, you know what, sometimes all you have to do is just do the work.
Yeah.
And the growth, you know, will come.
It will come.
And I'm just like, let this be a life lesson for you, Lara. Because sometimes we're actually scared to do the groundwork. Because we don't know if it's going to yield fruit. We don't know if it's going to actually bear any fruit. And I was just like, you know what? This has been really encouraging. And now I feel like I want to plant more stuff. I'm like, oh, what else can I plant, you know? But yeah. Slowly and steady.
Yeah, no, that's good. Actually, that does fit in well with the topic or the profession of the women that we're going to be talking about. Mm. And in light of the film that we're going to be reviewing today. So today we are speaking about the film 1929, which is an historical fictional drama about the ABBA women's riots. So yes, this is the film that we watched recently, and you've spoken a lot actually about this riot before. I feel as though it's inspired you
a lot. You're like, oh, this farmer, this trading woman, you know, selling their tomatoes and peppers, like, whoa. Yeah, how can I mirror them possibly?
Yeah, yeah, we're talking about mirroring, harvesting. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so the film is like, it's based on a true event, or true events, but it's a fictional drama, and it's about the Ikotabasi women's unrest of 1929 that claimed the lives of quite a few women mm-hmm. in the eastern part of Nigeria due to the implementation of a direct taxation on women in that area. And the film, which is fictional, opens with discussions centering around that taxation and a wave of protests that have been happening. And it basically follows on from that disruption, that frustration from a group of powerful women, but two powerful women in particular from various villages, basically going to the British colonial authorities and telling them, yo, this is not, it's not flying. It's not, we're not
it
having
ain't gonna
it.
Work.
It's not gonna work. We're not gonna have you taxing us women. Like, we're working hard in the market, growing our bell peppers.
Growing our spinach and tomatoes.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, this, the film, even the synopsis, at first it wouldn't be something that I would necessarily, I'm like, why am I watching a film about taxation? Mm-hmm. That's it's not something that I would be interested in, but like you've mentioned it before, you thought, okay, it'll be interesting to talk about.
I guess the first victory is the fact that we actually found it on Amazon Prime eventually, because
yes.
We spent so long looking, because I watched the film like a year or 2 years ago, and at the time it didn't really, I just like, oh, because that was my first time of actually finding out about the ABBA Women's War, which mm-hmm. is the official title that is given to the events that happened in 1929. So when I watched the film, that was like my first introduction to that particular event. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really like linger in my mind or anything. But when we started exploring the idea of introducing certain historical moments and the films that have been, you know,
portrayed
or the films that have been made portraying them, then it came back to my mind. Then we went to, I was like, I watched it on Amazon Prime. And then we went on Amazon Prime and we couldn't find it for quite a while.
Yeah, we were struggling. And that's definitely a comment on the difficulty of like finding like important films, Nollywood films, uh-huh. about like important parts of our history. Yeah. Like just struggling to find them.
Yeah, accessibility.
Yeah, accessibility is a real issue.
Yeah. But then, you know, we tried our luck again a few months later.
We were patient.
And then it reappeared on the, you know, on the platform. So yeah, it was really good to kind of just watch it again and see how the efforts that the filmmaker made in portraying that moment in Nigeria's history, you know, given the synopsis you've just given us. So the film portrays the activities of this woman, which obviously was sparked by the fact that they were going to be getting taxed. But do you think the film gave a good portrayal of the... Do you think if you watch the film, by watching the film, you understood what the ABBA Women's War was about?
I don't think I would have known. I think there's one thing, and this is one of the things that I liked about the film, is the fact that it focused solely on, it felt quite intimate, and it felt quite, the scope was quite narrow, and that it focused on these like one or two villages. Mm-hmm. And it was clear to me that, okay, they were protesting a taxation. And I liked the fact that there was that intimacy, and I felt really invested in the stories and the storyline. But in terms of maybe knowing about the wider implications or like the wider context,
yeah,
I think it touched upon it, but it didn't feel like political. To me, it didn't feel like political in any way. It didn't feel as though it was making a political commentary. It felt as though it was just saying that these women are not happy with the taxation that's happening to them, mm-hmm. and they're going to fight for that. But obviously the film does end, sadly, in a lot of tragedy. But the lead up to that, it didn't feel, for me anyway, it didn't feel particularly political. What about you?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I feel like you don't really see the wider context. So it was very simplified in terms of the storyline that they chose to follow. So you don't really see the bigger context of the impact of what was happening within that region. And even the, you know, the colonial sort of influence and all that stuff. But I think for me, with all this, with any sort of Nollywood attempt to retell a historical moment, I'm finding myself in a place where I firstly have to give them credit for the effort that is being made to actually just tell the story. And I think we need many more of these sort of films being made.
Yeah.
And then in terms of just the creativity, the creative license that the filmmaker gave themselves, or, you know, the script writer gave themselves with the film, you know, in the whole chaos and the event that was happening, was like the love story that they introduced. They kind of gave me a bit of a Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, that's what I wrote. I wrote that down in my notes. I was like, which kind of Romeo and Juliet story are they trying to like shoehorn in here? And
it was annoying.
I think, again, like we've said this before, so many of our other reviews of films, it, you know, the device, I think, could have been compelling if the execution was there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the characters just came randomly and they started talking. And I was like, are they supposed to be in love? Are they just, like, friends? I don't even know what their names were. And then it was like, because they kept on showing up on the screen, I gathered that they are from the opposing sides.
Yeah.
But that wasn't made clear. I had to, you know, be piecing things together. And unless a film is explicitly a mystery, the audience member should not be
trying to do Pythagoras theorem.
I'm not supposed to be doing detective work and trying to figure out who is who in the film. So that was disappointing to me, because I actually think that could have been a good device to sort of highlight the strain. You know, even though it's fictional, it could have added something really nice.
Yeah, one can easily see how that could have possibly happened.
Mm.
Yeah, one can envisage how that could have possibly been a scenario at the time where, you know, the son of a chief warrant officer and the daughter of one of the village women fell in love, and, you know, there was this conflict and whatnot. But I felt like the storytelling for that was slightly annoying, although I appreciated the creative license they gave themselves to kind of add that element to it. But I just felt like the couple were very, the girl in particular, I felt like she was very stupid. And the decision she made to go and rescue the boy, and she was so oblivious to all the other things that was happening to her mother. And, you know, I was just, I felt like throwing my shoe at her from
her, heckling her from your living room.
But like, child, will you get back to your mother this minute, you know? But also, I like the way they, because a lot of corruption would have taken place at the time when, because of the indirect rule that happened, the way the British government governed
Nigeria,
you know, the areas of Nigeria, they would have had very difficult times trying to implement a lot of their decisions or a lot of their directives. So the way they, so even like the idea of corruption, or even the introduction of corruption, because I know it's one thing that's been said that the British introduced corruption to Nigerians, and the system of government was one that aided corruption. And when they left, we just
continued
in that pattern. You know, I'm sure it's up for debate, but seeing that in the end, in that film, it looked like they couldn't have achieved their goal if the chief of the village, I think, the ruler, because they bribed him with like, oh, wine from the queen and swords from the queen and, you know, whiskey and this and that.
That's one, that did irritate me. I mean, that sort of thing, like, did happen, but it, it was portrayed in a very cartoonish way.
So
obviously you've spoken about indirect rule of the British colonial powers, creating this warrant chief system and having native court orders where the Igbo men, well, typically, if we just use them as an example, would be in these positions and they would be able to rule and make decisions in the local community, and women were kept out of that, which was actually not normal. I mean, women had...
contrary to the traditions of the Igbo people.
Yeah, so that created that a strain or contention. There's already that element. And then they have the power, and then the women are frustrated, and then they're under threat of being attacked. And I think it would have been better to take that more seriously and actually show the insidiousness and sinister nature of something like that in the film. But instead, it felt as though the warrant chiefs, the officers, and one of the main antagonists in the film, a character's name called Bulu, I believe, he was a cartoon character.
Yeah.
He, every time he was saying, before God, or no, after God is government. And he's making, it sounds humorous, and like, this isn't a humorous thing. I wish it was taken more seriously. So that was one of my problems, I think, with the film. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the characters, what do you think of the portrayal of the two lead female characters?
Yeah, so like the
Ireti Doyle and Shola Shebowale, who played Uma Yoruba. So she was like the Yoruba woman who married, she must have married an Igbo man and moved to the Igbo region.
Yeah.
And just lived there. What do you think of like the way they were portrayed and what their character was meant to fulfill?
So I like, I love those actresses, and whenever Shola is like, when she's acting on screen, it's like me, like she's acting with so much energy. So she's a really a force of nature on screen. It's like when she's screaming, when she's hollering, me too, it's like my head is on, my hands are on my head as well. Like the blood vessels that's coming out of her neck, I'm also feeling it. So I feel as though like I joined her in like, how can this be happening to me? You know, her character is the, her character experiences the first moment of a threat of taxation, and she is completely like dismayed by it. And I felt that. So I think it was a good portrayal. And I think you just have to, you know, get on board with the melodrama of the acting. Ireti Doyle's character, I think her character was definitely meant to sort of show like the organization and the elegance of the organization of rallying the women together and saying that this will not run with us, and we will step to the men of our communities. And so in terms of them, what their characters were supposed to portray or fulfill, I think they did that well. And I think, you know, when we talk more about the actual realities of the riots in a later episode, I actually think they captured that spirit and the truth of those experiences quite well for me. What about you?
I mean, like you said, I love, you know, Shola Shebowale. Many of us call her Auntie Shola Shebowale or Mummy Shola Shebowale. Yeah. But I felt like she's always a very dramatic. I feel like a lot of her character have always been like quite dramatic. So it felt natural that they would put her, they would cast her for that type of role. But I felt like there was like some slight over-dramatization of certain roles. But you know, but then where the right emotion needed to be portrayed, I felt like particularly, you know, the time when her daughter did the nonsense she did and went and took the boy that they'd captured as a leverage, because what had happened was the women took the son of Bulu and they captured him and kept him in a place as a leverage for them to release the women that they've imprisoned. And then her daughter then, obviously, who was in love with Bulu's son, found out where the son was, and they released him and all, and that led to some, you know, catastrophe. I felt like that for me was like the height of, that was a very emotional moment in the film. And I guess the sense of betrayal, the sense of wrongful killing, knowing that actually the son is still alive, Bulus killed her based on wrong information that he had received, that they had killed his son, and he felt that he had to take revenge. And I think that moment when all the women took the corpses, so they took her corpse and her daughter's corpse, and they took it to the administrative office. I don't know, you know, where the colonial administrators
resided.
That moment, I felt like there could have been more. It could have really. I mean, he did enough. It did something, but I felt like it was slightly rushed over. Like
lacking.
It was quite lacking. The emotion that particular event was meant to convey, I felt like it was quite lacking. But overall, I think those two characters. But funny enough, one of the reviews I saw online said about these people. He said, "It's a Nigerian film starring Shola Shebowale and Ireti Doyle, in which the former's histrionics are not crouch pleasing and the latter's typical elegance is unconvincing."
Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know. I think where we are being kind and saying, you know, well done for the effort that is being made. But I think at the end of the day, we should hold Nollywood films up to the standard that we expect from any sort of decent, you know, film production or endeavor. And it, unfortunately, this film falls under that, I think.
Yeah.
Especially when the film started. I mean, within the first 30 seconds, there was one dubbing or voiceover of one of the district officers. And it was with this English accent that was clearly not coming from the body of the character. I said, "Lord, what is this?" I said, "What kind of film are we watching?" And I thought, that's just... I don't think that was needed. You could have had you could have just had him speak.
Yeah.
And it would have been fine. I don't know why he needs to falsify his accent and find some...
I guess they were trying to portray him as a white English man.
I really hope they weren't.
But I think they were, because he's a South American. Apparently the man is actually South American. And obviously he physically
looks... Because he's slim.
He looks the closest to, like, what a white person... Because he was meant to be the... I forgot what they're called now. So he's not... He's the district officer. And the district officers are usually British. They're English men.
Yeah.
So they've used him to portray an Englishman, which I really feel like if you don't have enough money or if you don't have the resources to cast an actual English man for the film, then find another creative way to show the influence that they had on the way the warrant officers were acting. So perhaps you can do it through letter writing, where it's like, oh, now they've received a letter from...
Exactly.
Now they've received a letter from London telling them that, oh, they must do this and they must do that. Exactly. And now they're acting upon the instructions in the letter. I feel, because I've seen quite a few low production, because I think the film is generally low budget, because the production itself, whilst I appreciate the effort they've made in at least telling the story, I would prefer that they at least tell the story than to be like, oh, we don't have enough money.
Fair enough, yeah.
Or we don't have, you know, so...
That's true. They could have done, like, a short... This is my thing. Like, you could have done, like, a short film or something where it's like, okay, maybe it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You can then, like, use that money and, like, improve the actual, like, set design. I mean, it didn't even look...
Like a 1929.
Like a 1929 film. I was thinking,
this it just looked like a village film where they just set it in a village where they felt like, oh, you know, if it's 1929 and all of this, then, you know, it must be in a village. I'm sure it was in a village somewhere. And that film just looked like they could have done it at any time in Nigeria's history.
It doesn't look unique to that time, like, at all. I mean, obviously at some point you just have to, like, not care and just get into the story. But yeah, I feel as though, I don't know, if you had to... We've actually not been giving these films ratings out of...
I know, we should start giving them ratings, shouldn't we?
I feel as though, like, if I had to give a rating out of 5 stars... That means that they'll be quite low. I think I'd have to give it like a 2.5.
Oh, you're generous.
Oh, really?
Well, only slightly. I would give it a 2 or maybe even a 1.5, but I'll give it a 2.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 2 for effort. I'll give it a 2 for the attempt at storytelling and the dramatization of, especially from like Auntie Shola and Auntie Iriti.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it really. I mean, towards the end of the film, let's speak about the ending and the way they crowned it all. So they showed the women, you know, being killed.
So the culmination of the film, the climax of the film is where Auntie Shola's character is through the kind of like fakery and trying to bridge, she is killed sadly, and upon the news of that, the women who have been protesting then go to confront the powers that be, and there's a standoff at the end.
Yeah. And Bulu, like you said, in his very cartoonish character, because it just showed that he didn't have the confidence, or he wasn't quite man enough for the job, and he really just used the junior officers to execute the work that he couldn't do himself and calling the orders. And yeah, they had that moment where, you know, Iriti Doyle has the sort of elegant force of nature in a very quiet kind of determined way, you know, where they were going to go and meet, they were gathering other women from other communities. And they were all going, you know that part in the boat where they were all coming?
Yes.
The boat? I felt like that part was actually slightly hair-raising.
Yes, that was. I think actually that was probably the one redeeming thing about the film. I felt as though like, I wish there was more of this height and this elevating.
Yeah.
It felt as though it was elevating the story, even that camera angles, and it was giving it scale, which I thought was like lacking beforehand.
So there were some moments of grandeur there where it redeemed the film partially. So yeah, the film ended basically in a very tragic way where, you know, many women were killed. It didn't actually quite portray, like, you know, the, I guess there's going to be limitation to what the story is trying to tell, and given the time that they have as well. But yeah, so the women, quite a good number of the women died, and in the end there was a summary of
what actually happened.
Of what actually happened, and how many, it did say in the film that 10,000 women died, but then when I was actually researching, it just seemed like it was like, you know, maybe a couple of hundreds people who passed away, who died. So it's not quite clear how many lives were actually taken, you know. But I think, do you think it's worth watching? Would you recommend it to people? So if someone's like, if you're like, you know, like the 1929 Aba women's riots, and, did you know about this happened in Nigeria? And I was like, what riots? Are you going to be like, actually, you know, that's a good film you can watch.
No, I cannot. I'm sorry, I cannot. I'll probably like show, you know, maybe tell them the timestamps, you know, various clips, like go to this moment, it will tell you maybe of the spirit. But to sit down and watch a 90-minute film of this.
Okay, if you had to choose between recommending this film, 1929, and Queen Amina or Zaria, which one were you?
I think even the Queen Amina would be better to recommend. Yeah. I feel as though, number one,
Because it's better production.
Yeah, it has a high production value. The story isn't as well known. So I think it's a bit more fun to see something that's more, that is even beyond like colonial time. Prior to that, I think that's a more interesting story. So yeah, if I had to choose between those two, it would be Queen Amina. But if we just touch on a bit of the themes. Of this, I think like for me, some of the themes that stood out to me, and we touched on it a little bit already, is just the lack of like male allyship. The lack of male allyship, I feel, is a commentary and, you know, indictment on the men in the community. Because as I was watching, I was just thinking,
where are the men?
Like, literally, like, where are the men? You know, I mean, and the question that it had me asking myself is that, you know, this patriarchy that men love to hold on to so dearly, like, what is your patriarchy worth if the women now have to fight for themselves, but your patriarchy said it will protect them in the first place? It's like, It just called into question.
But does the patriarchy say it will protect them?
No, I mean, maybe that's the lie patriarchy tells. But I mean, the rhetoric you often get, right? Or I guess maybe less about patriarchy, but more about the concept of manhood is that men are supposed to be protectors. And that is that feeds into to patriarchy, right? And the patriarchy wasn't, like, doing what it was... supposed to be doing. Well, maybe it was. Maybe that's an argument that someone would like to make. That
we'll see. We'll talk about that more in the actual episode where we discuss the event itself in detail and see what roles the men actually played. But with the film, I was thinking, these women, they have husbands, they have brothers, they have, you know, they have fathers. It's like none of them were actually playing any role of any, you know, significance in the film. It just seemed like all these women came out and, you know, they were just like fighting for themselves and, you know, whatever happens, happens to them. So that was quite an interesting perspective for the film to take. So yeah, definitely felt like, yeah, the men, what I got from it was like, oh, the men were just doing nothing.
Yeah.
In that period, and we'll see if that's actually historically correct. I guess the other theme is the women empowerment and women power. You can't help but feel like, you know, get some sort, there are moments where you just feel like, wow, power to the women, in a way. The way they stood up for themselves, the way they were determined, and even like, obviously, they had women from other communities who gathered to support the cause and everything. Yeah, so there was that theme of, I don't want to call it feminism, but yeah, just like women empowerment and the strength. And the strength of the women were really portrayed. And actually, it's almost like they were the backbone of the society in the way they were, because what they were fighting for, like, you know, they were responsible for the children, for the trade. So the impact of taxation on them was going to be quite significant, and rightly so, that they took up the fight and, you know, tried to address the issue. Any other theme?
I think we'll speak about in the next few episodes is just about what was the impact of that. And I think an interesting question to investigate is, you know, why was taxation on women like such a divisive and contentious issue? Like, why was there such a fence at it, you know? Like, why couldn't men and women be taxed? Like, that's something that I found interesting, would want to like explore more.
Okay, well, I guess to find out answers to that, you have to tune into the next episode. So for now, we've come to the end of the film review for 1929. Hopefully it's given our listeners some insight into what the film is about, and you know, they can decide whether to watch it or not. I would say, just to encourage the Nollywood attempts and efforts of our filmmakers, I would say definitely watch it, because, you know, to be honest, for me, I would have known nothing about 1929, about Women's Riot. I don't even know. I know why I watched it now, but I'm not going to say why I watched it. Yeah, I just randomly, well, not randomly, but I watched it on Amazon Prime and I thought, oh, this happened. Oh, wow, interesting. And now I'm wiser for it, or at least I'm more knowledgeable for it.
I suppose that is, and that's a good thing. And I am glad we're here talking about it. And yeah, it's brought some really interesting questions to interrogate. So
Evelyn's changing her mind, guys. She's going to recommend it. Watch it. Watch it and let us know what you think.
Yeah, let us know. But for now, that's it from us.
All right, until next time.
Until next time. Bye.
Ciao. So guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learnt a thing or two.
Yep, you can find our episodes on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to keep up with us in between episodes, you can follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Niger.
You can also find links to some further reading and information about the episode's topic in the show notes. If you want to encourage, collaborate, or as I like to say, support the ministry, drop us an email at onceuponaniger@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Bye.